This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, April 15th, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, what if it doesn't make any sense? When poet Matthew Zapruder was in high school, he met a girl who was into very strange music. She gave him an album that sounded to him like a garbage truck backing up over a bag full of aluminum bagpipes and dead robots. Matthew Zapruder played the album over and over until the music finally made sense to him. Lady Godiva dressed so demurely. And now he says he can't remember the person he was when he didn't like the Velvet Underground. In an essay up on our website, poetryfoundation.org, Zapruder says that one of the things poetry criticism should do, but doesn't do a very good job of, is getting us readers past our initial resistance to strange and unfamiliar poetry. He joins me by phone from San Francisco. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Curtis. How are you doing?
Good. But I have a little confession to make to you, because one of the poets that I have been resisting for maybe 20 years is one of the most famous poets of our time and a poet that everybody I like in the world of poetry loves. It's John Ashbery.
All right, Curtis, we'll see what we can do about that.
Why do you think Ashbery is so puzzling to so many readers? I know I'm not alone in this.
Well, the first time I read Ashbery was when I was in my 20s, and I also found it difficult to get into, and I probably didn't like it at first very much either.
Well, how'd you get past it then?
I kept reading it over and over again.
Uh-huh. This is the Velvet Underground experience.
And I just assumed that it might be my problem. And in fact, I was correct. I think that the poems, Ashbery's poems, don't do the sorts of things that we expect poems to do.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to listen to just one Ashbery poem, just one of the many hundreds, if not thousands, that he's written. It's called How to Continue. For listeners who have never heard or read this poem, what would you say about this poem?
You know, when you're about to hear a poem, I think you have to be ready to be in the presence of mystery and the unknown. And reading the poem and understanding it and being inside it is not the same thing as dissecting a small animal. but the second thing specifically I would say about this poem is there is a little story being told about a particular place and the people who visit it and the people who live there. So I would just, you know, the first time through hearing it, I would just listen for that little story that's being told.
Well, let's listen to it. Here's John Ashbery reading How to Continue.
Well, there once was a woman, and she kept a shop, selling trinkets to tourists not far from a dock, who came to see what life could be far back on the island. And it was always a party there, always different but very nice. New friends to give you advice, or fall in love with you, which is nice. And each grew so perfectly from the other, it was a marvel of poetry and irony. And in this unsafe quarter, much was scary and dirty, but no one seemed to mind very much. The parties went on from house to house. There were friends and lovers galore all around the store. There was moonshine in winter and starshine in summer, and everybody was happy to have discovered what they discovered. And then one day the ship sailed away. There were no more dreamers, just sleepers, in heavy attitudes on the dock, moving as if they knew how, among the trinkets and the souvenirs, the random shops of modern furniture. And a gale came and said, "It is time to take all of you away, from the tops of the trees to the little houses, on little paths so startled." And when it became time to go, they none of them would leave without the other, for they said, "We are all one here, and if one of us goes, the other will not go." And the wind whispered it to the stars. The people all got up to go and looked back on love.
That was John Ashbery reading How to Continue. So tell me what pleases you about that poem.
Ooh, well, I don't know if I would describe myself as pleased.
Tell me what intrigues you or what draws you to
it. I think it makes me sad.
Yeah.
The first few times I read it, there were certain things that I noticed, and I felt something very, very much at the end of the poem, but I didn't know what I felt, and that didn't bother me. I went and read it again and put the book away and then came back to it and read it again, and then maybe after reading it several times, then I started to have other thoughts. It is not like they just I magically, instantly felt like I needed to have a big thought.
Well, that's what's interesting. You said you felt something, but you didn't know what you felt. That's what
I think that that's okay in poetry. I mean, it's based. I think you have to be ready to not know everything right away.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back over the poem a little bit. There's lines here of striking banality.
And it was always a party there, always different but very nice. New friends to give you advice or fall in love with you, which is nice.
Not only does that rhyme, but it repeats the word nice. It sounds like a conversation you have with your tedious aunt.
It sounds like a chit-chatting poem. So what's he up to there? Why is he doing that?
The language is taken very much from real life and put right into the poem without a lot of alteration from the poet.
Yeah.
That's something you'd hear all the time. You'd hear someone say those words all the time.
Mm-hmm. And he's not disparaging. He's not mocking the fact that we talk like that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the question you have to ask yourself. I mean, if you want to think more about it, is why these rhymes, you know?
Well, there once was a woman, and she kept a shop selling trinkets to tourists not far from a dock who came to see what life could be far back on the island.
It's nursery rhyme-ish.
Yeah, it is, and that O that begins it. It's a song. It's like a song or a kid's song.
Mm-hmm.
This is one thing I find very powerful and moving about Ashbery, is that there's a kind of generosity towards all the different ways that we can speak.
Mm-hmm.
This way of speaking is not ironized or put down or anything like that. It's just taken for what it is for as long as it's useful in the poem, and then the poem turns and becomes much more elevated in its language.
And then one day the ship sailed away. There were no more dreamers, just sleepers in heavy attitudes on the dock, moving as if they knew how, among the trinkets and the souvenirs, the random shops of modern furniture.
Well, I think what's happening is that the ship it brings people to this island.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ship doesn't come anymore, it sails away, it doesn't bring people anymore, those people who are left there don't have any more connection, or they don't have any more contact with anyone who's coming from far away.
Right, the party's kind of over.
The party's over.
And a gale came and said, it is time to take all of you away, from the tops of the trees to the little houses, on little paths so startled.
This poem darkens quite suddenly. Everybody's left on the dock and a gale comes. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a very strange moment in the poem because suddenly the weather is talking.
Yeah.
It is time to take all of you away. I think that there's a kind of larger consciousness a lot of the time in Ashbery's poems, too, a kind of sense of the menace of our contemporary lives that very subtly creeps in if you and you can feel it. And that's a moment there. It is, and a gale came and said, it is time to take all of you away. That's kind of what we're all secretly sort of afraid of all the time, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, something drastic suddenly changing our lives, or a death. It cries out for it to read it metaphorically in some way, but it doesn't quite... Ashbery, it will slip away from you. It's like holding water in your hand. It's going to get out between the cracks in your fingers if you try to pin down what that gale is exactly.
Well, again, if we're trying to be helpful to people who might not already be totally at home with Ashbery, I mean, I might say,
like me,
I would hold out as long as possible against the urge to read Ashbery metaphorically. There's something there on its own face.
Right.
That we should try to live with for as long as possible, I think.
Yeah, without trying to figure out exactly what it means.
That right there, what you just said,
mm-hmm.
That is how we are taught to read poems, and that is what is actually antithetical to reading and understanding and
enjoying
poetry, is the urge to always turn everything in the poem into a metaphor that's really actually about something else.
Right, right.
I was taught to read that way, too.
And when it became time to go, they none of them would leave without the other, for they said, we are all one here, and if one of us goes, the other will not go. And the wind whispered it to the stars. The people all got up to go and looked back on love.
Now, I want to play something for you. I after he read this poem, I asked Ashbery if he was ever surprised by the interpretations of critics and readers, and he thought about it for a minute, and he remembered a review in the New York Times by a guy named Langdon Hammer, which cited the poem we just heard as...
somehow being about AIDS and losing lovers. I was a little surprised when I read it, because that really wasn't what I had been writing about. But I was, however, writing in the world at the time of AIDS, and I realized that it could be about that, even though that wasn't specifically what I had in mind at the time, and it was part of the larger subject of what I was writing about at the time I was writing.
Well,
one finds these things out from other people very often.
Well, your poetry is very tempting to read a lot into it.
Yeah.
Because it's very open. It's a huge temptation, I think, on the part.
Yeah, well, I sort of like to leave it as wide open as possible so that people can do that. That's what everybody does anyway, and so why not make it easier for them?
Mm. I was amazed and impressed that Ashbery was open to it. Even he expects people to read stuff into his poems, and he was perfectly willing to accept that that was a legitimate reading.
Yeah, I mean, if you said this is about the 1969 World Series,
I think
that might be a little bit more of a that might
he that might have
be
been open to that too. Who knows?
Yeah, but although you probably could actually,
you probably could.
that was the Mets when the Mets beat the Orioles, right? I would say when I read this poem, the way that it talks about loss and the sorts of feelings of loss it evokes in me, it makes me think of the AIDS epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of loss that feels close to the loss in this poem. How could one argue with that reading? I mean, that would be, one could say, oh, no, it actually makes me think of some other kind of loss. It makes me think of the loss of, you know, a parent or something. That could be true for someone else. You and I and Langdonhammer and Ashbery, for that matter, all seem to find a lot of room in it to think about things. And I think that's the mark of a good poem.
Thanks, Matthew.
Sure.
Matthew Zapruder's latest book of poems is The Pajamaist, published in paperback by Copper Canyon. You can also read his article calling for a new kind of poetry criticism on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.